We had an executive committee meeting August 4th. The summary of the executive committee is under tab 1, number 1. I'll briefly go through it. We talked a little bit about the scallop rotational area management, that the Nantucket Lightship area closed early, and the relatively very small allocation of yellowtail. We talked about the elephant trunk area and the likely scenario that that may close early as well, and also concerns about safety. We talked basically about administratively how many actions can we take as we move forward. We're in the middle of Amendment 11 for scallops. Right after the, in 2007, we have to start a framework action for management measures for 2008 and 2009, and to address any other issues is going to be very difficult. And this will come up under scallops later today. Also talked about conflict of interest. We had received some press calls about permit buying, et cetera, which there's nothing wrong with. And I sent out a notice to everyone that, you know, as your financial interests change, the law requires that you update your financial interest form. We talked about travel reimbursement. As you all know, we've been level funded for a long time now, and we're trying to make ends meet as best as we can. And one of the things we noticed is on our travel policy, we don't follow the feds that says that we should take the least expensive mode of travel. And so we decided to implement that. So if, say, we had a meeting in Bar Harbor and someone wanted to fly from Boston to Bar Harbor and then take a rental car, and that was much more costly than using your another mode of transportation, we would only reimburse at the lower cost. So that's now the executive committee would like that approved. So maybe at some point, Mr. Chairman, you could we could have a motion to approve it. It's under enclosure 2 to the travel to the executive committee, and I'll read what it says. The change is basically reimbursements are limited to amounts reasonably necessary for the conduct of travel in connection with council business. Travel must be performed using the least expensive means of transportation practical and appropriate to the nature and purpose of the travel. If an individual elects to use a more expensive mode of transportation, reimbursement will be limited to the least expensive transportation available, and the traveler will be responsible for the difference. Now, that matches just about every other council's policy, and it matches the NIMS policy. So it maybe when I'm done, we can vote to approve that as a change to our SOPs. Third thing we talked about at the executive committee was the developing, at the last council meeting, you asked staff to develop a white paper about the different options to go forward with the with GARM 3 and our adjustment for rebuilding, 10-year rebuilding, the next action for groundfish. So we developed a white paper, ran it by the executive committee, and that will be discussed under groundfish. Next, we talked about there's a manager's amendment to the Pombo MSA reauthorization bill, and we agreed the council has already commented on just about all the issues, and so we took no action or no recommendation on that. Talked about funding for GIS work in the phase one that we're working on in GIS. I used some ecosystem contract money to hire a GIS expert to assist LA and the Habitat Committee. That funding ran out, and at Executive Committee, I asked Pat Kirkle for additional funds to cover us through the end of the year, and she agreed, so we're keeping him on till the end of the year to do GIS work. And that's basically it. At one other point, when we talked about safety issues, with a Derby fishery in the elephant trunk area, the executive committee asked that I send out a press release about safety, and I did that, and that's also in enclosure one. So if you want to make a motion on that travel policy, approve the travel policy.
Anyone want to make a motion on the general limitations and the soft?
Rip. I shall move.
Seconded. Seconded by John Nelson. Any discussion? All those in favor of the motion to approve the general limitations section of the SOPs, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A few other things.
Excuse me. John.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to, before we got off the funding for the Habitat GIS, so the sense is that the regional administrator is probably going to be able to find funding, and that's very positive, and I certainly think we all appreciate that. I noted that the committee also was looking at non-governmental funding. How are they looking at that? Has anyone come forward from non-governmental sources to provide any funding? And if not, again, how are we trying to approach that particular issue?
Well, as we've discussed this on numerous occasions at chairman's meetings and executive director meetings, and we can't take funding directly from private sources under our government grant rules. So we discussed at executive committee that if someone wanted to fund and contract for an individual and have the individual report to the organization but work for us, that would be a way around that. So that's how it would be administered. We couldn't administer any funding.
Is it also possible for those types of groups to provide funding to the service rather than directly to the council for that purpose? Make a donation for dedicated to the be used for that particular purpose alone. We do it on the state level. I mean, that happens all the time. People make donations for the funds to be used for a specific purpose, and we accept it, et cetera, et cetera, and use it for that purpose. I know our brothers and sisters in the federal level like to have more bureaucracy associated with it, but is that still a possibility?
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I may, there are certain circumstances in which the government can receive donated services or funds, I believe. It would have to be something that I would run by the Department of Commerce General Counsel Office that deals with these kinds of issues. So there is a possibility in limited circumstances. I don't know if this one qualifies or not without getting all the details and running it by the Department of Commerce General Counsel. If it's a serious offer, then I could do that.
Just to follow up, Mr. Chairman, my final comment on it is that I don't think we'll get the funds unless you solicit them, and in order to solicit them, you should have a process in place to be able to accept them. So we should find out if that is a possibility and then have an active solicitation. I think this is a work that is, certainly of value to all groups, and I think that they... that type of offer should be on the table.
And I think there was a question as to whether or not the council can actually solicit funds. So, but point taken. Sally.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to let the council know that Environmental Defense, through this discussion, has some funds available for this. I think the concern is what Paul has raised, and which I discussed with him about how the money flows. Another concern that I would have is that individuals would see the money coming from a conservation group and be concerned about what kind of impact that would have on the outcome of the work. I don't have that concern, but there's a concern about what the perception would be. Nonetheless, there are funds available, for a small amount from Environmental Defense, to keep the work on the GIS project going for the habitat amendment. And if there's a way we can get that money flowing in the right direction appropriately, then we'll make that available.
Paul, continue, please.
Okay, just some general information. ICES is meeting in Boston 30 October to 3 November. For the new chairman and vice chairman, there's a council chair and vice chair and ED meeting of all the regional councils in Washington, D.C. on 30 and 31 October. Karen has already made tentative arrangements for us to stay and travel. Our staff, Chris Kellogg, Tom Neese, Leslie Ann, and Andy Applegate made presentations at the annual American Fisheries Society meeting in Lake Placid and did a super job. I've gotten a lot of feedback that their presentations were excellent. Bill Hogarth has transferred $16,000 to us for enforcement committee work for 2007 or the rest of this year. So as we get a new executive, a new enforcement committee up, there's funding for them to meet. Remind the council that we'll be setting priorities for 2007 at our next council meeting, and I'll get you out a draft priority list early. I've already drafted one and have sent it to the old chair and vice chair for our October 17th and 18th NRCC meeting. We'll go through all the priorities of the different the two councils and AFMSC and NIMS and see how get an early look at everything, and then the council will vote in November for priorities. Under tab one, you'll see a list of training. As you recall, Phil Rule and other council members were talking about a training session for the council. There is a enclosure in under tab one that talks about some NOS training, public issues and conflict management that Tom Hill and I have attended. And at our next executive committee, we'll see when we can schedule that. I had planned on doing it this fall, but we don't have the funding. We could get one council meeting a three-day into a two-day, but I never got the second day. And this is a three-day training that we're trying to get to two-day. So we'll discuss that at our next executive committee meeting. There are draft MPA regs out that came out yesterday. We'll get them. There's a 145-day comment period. So I imagine the Habitat Committee will be meeting within the next 4 months or so. So at some point, the council might want to charge the Habitat Committee to develop comment on the proposed MPA regs. And lastly, budget. Part of our meeting in D.C., October 30 and 31, will be to discuss budget. And right now, the Senate mark for the councils is $30 million for eight regional councils. And the House mark is $15 million for 2007. That's a huge difference. We've been around the 15 mark for the last several years, and anything above 15 to the 30 would be great. If it's still level funded, we're going to be hurting again. But anyway, all odds are that there'll be a continuing resolution in October, and we don't know when there'll be a federal budget. And let's hope we get the Senate mark of 30, which would allow us to do a lot more work. That's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, questions for Paul? Okay, the next report is from their regional administrator, George.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A number of actions to make the council aware of. Today, September 26th, we published a proposed rule that this council had requested, proposing an increase in the weight used in the Northeast region to measure net mesh 120 millimeters or greater to 8 kilograms, and the comment period on that will be open until October 26th. As I'm sure you know, we published a proposed rule for Framework 42 to multi-species and Framework 3 for monkfish on July 26th. The comment period closed on the 25th of August, and we currently have a final rule under development for that action. On August 31st, we implemented a rule that modified the regulations of the groundfish FMP to allow vessels issued either a general category Atlantic sea scallop permit or a limited access sea scallop permit when not fishing under a scallop days at sea limitation to fish for scallops with small dredges within the Great South Channel scallop dredge exemption area. Regarding days at sea leasing in the groundfish fishery, we have in FY fishing year 2006 processed 175 leases. Of those, 152 have been approved thus far. The total number of days at sea leased is 4,935, with an average cost per day at sea of $321. The final rule for Framework 43 to the Northeast Multispecies Plan published and became effective on August 15th, 2006. This was to establish a herring-exempted fishery. Amendment 1 to the herring FMP, proposed rule, will file at the Federal Register today and will publish tomorrow, September 27th, with a comment period of 45 days from tomorrow's date. On August 1st, we published a notice in the Federal Register informing the public that 362.5 monkfish research days at sea had not been allocated to qualifying projects through the 2006 research set-aside program, and those days have been reallocated as exempted fishing days at sea in that fishery. We are closing the summer flounder fishery in federal waters off Massachusetts on September 28th to complement the Commonwealth's September 7th summer flounder closure. And today, in the Federal Register, we published a notice of a proposal to conduct experimental fishing with a comment period open through October 11th. This project would survey the Great South Channel dredge exemption area over a 10-month period to quantify catch rates of scallops and finfish bycatch across multiple seasons. Under protected resources, a notice of availability for the draft environmental impact statement for the right whale ship strike reduction strategy published on July 27th in the Federal Register, and that comment period closes October 5th. Effective yesterday, we published a final rule requiring the use of modified scallop dredge gear by all vessels with the Federal Atlantic Sea Scallop Fishery Permit when fishing with scallop dredge gear in waters south of 41 degrees 9 minutes north from the shoreline to the outer boundary of the EEZ from May 1st through November 30th. This is what's been called the scallop dredge chain gear or chain mat rule. The Harbor Porpoise Take Reduction Plan we are conducting outreach meetings, a series of them related to Gulf of Maine and Mid-Atlantic components of the Harbor Porpoise Take Reduction Plan. The first of those is scheduled for October 3rd in Gloucester, and a total of 7 such meetings will be held from October 2006 through January 2007. The first meeting of the Atlantic Trawl Gear Take Reduction Team was held September 19th to 22nd in Providence, Rhode Island. And further information on that subject is located on our regional office webpage under Protected Resources Division. And finally, we have solicited proposals for monkfish and sea scallop-related research activities for the 2007 monkfish and sea scallop research set-aside programs. We've received 4 monkfish proposals and 14 sea scallop proposals, and those proposals are currently under review. Thank you.
Questions for George? Mike.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know the proposed rule for herring is coming out tomorrow, but can you tell me if that 1A buffer zone passed or not, the summer buffer zone?
That decision hasn't been made. This is just the proposed rule, and the comment period is already open on the amendment itself, so we're still collecting public comments on the amendment and starting tomorrow on the rule. So we're quite a ways away from a final decision on any measure in Amendment 1.
Is that going to make for a January 1st implementation?
It's possible. It's possible. It depends on how quickly the review goes and how quickly we can publish the final rule. I'm sure we're going to get a lot of comments on the amendment, and we'll have to respond to those.
Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. George, on Framework 42, I know the proposed rule is in, and we're waiting on the final rule. Is there any idea of the timeline? I mean, we're a little behind.
It's hard for me to say, as always, because it's somewhat out of our hands. But it's well along in the review process. I would expect it would be, you know, within the next several weeks, but there's no guarantee of that. It has to be carefully reviewed all the way up through the Department and Office of Management and Budget. So it's where it needs to be, but I can't predict exactly when it's going to come out.
You know, George, is there any chance that the emergency rule will expire before it comes out, and then will that necessitate another emergency action?
That possibility does exist, and we are considering what we would do in that case. I think everybody's well aware that we're committed to keeping protective measures in place until we get 42. So we'll have to see how that those two actions mesh together.
That won't require any council action, though, if you need to renew the emergency action?
No, it wouldn't.
David Pierce.
I have a suggestion, George, with regards to the notice that you put out on dogfish indicating that there'd be no more landings of dogfish. The notice goes out indicating that the fishery is closed. There is no dogfish fishery. It's a bycatch quota, so I would suggest that in the future you just indicate that there'll be no more landing of dogfish taken as bycatch, just so people don't get confused. I get calls all the time regarding, is there a fishery? And my response is, no, there is no fishery. So just to be technically correct, that's my suggestion, George.
Okay, thanks. Good catch. We'll try to remember to do that.
So.
Thank you, John. Back to 42 again, George. I just maybe you could explain to me. I have a question with the process here, but my understanding is there's a 90-day basically rule from when you receive to something. I'm having a hard time understanding when this clock starts on this, because I thought it started when you publish.
That's a complicated question. I think what you're thinking of is that there are statutory timeframes for review and approval of FMP amendments, but this is a framework. So there's no statutory requirements for a framework. Once we, on Amendment 1, for example, on herring, once we get that and we determine that the clock will start, we have to have a 60-day public comment period on the amendment and a 45-day comment period on the proposed rule, and a decision has to be made within approximately 95 days. That's true for an amendment, but it's not true for specifications or frameworks or regulatory amendments.
Anyone else? Go to the audience, Maggie, and then Ron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maggie Raymond, Associated Fisheries of Maine. George, thank you for mentioning the EFP request that was published in today's Federal Register. And council members, you have received an email from me dated September 15th, in which I asked you to consider commenting on this particular proposal. Copies were made, and you they were distributed to you. Basically, this is an attempt by the Gulf of Maine Research Institute and Associated Fisheries of Maine to provide more information to the service on the interaction between small general category scallop dredges and yellowtail flounder during what the service considers to be the spawning, peak spawning time for those, for yellowtail flounder. And we would like to survey the Great South Channel Exemption Area during April, May, and June to provide that information for future decision-making about access to that area. So I would request that if you take the time to read the two-page Federal Register notice that was distributed to you and ask you to consider at some point during the meeting, after you've had a chance to look at it, writing a letter of support for this proposal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ron Smolowitz, Fisheries Survival Fund. I support Maggie's proposal. The question I have is, on the turtle chain rule, there's a line that's drawn at 41 degrees, 9 minutes. And our public comment was that in that line should stop vertically somewhere, whether it was 70 degrees or 71 degrees. But in the rule, it stretches right across George's Bank. And it's actually pretty high up. It covers the complete lightship area up a little bit up into the channel, BB buoy, and a good portion of closed area too. The problem I see in your, you have in the experimental fishery actions a proposal for the days at sea exemption for research set aside, and you're using that same line. And I think the council needs to be really concerned about this, because wherever there's been otter trawling, scallop dredging, or gill netting, the scallop dredge has the least of the interactions with the turtles. And as far as sea turtles this year, the one take that did occur north, the closest one is off of Block Island, was done by an otter trawl. NIMS right now is working with TEDS in trawl gear. And all the publications similar to this talks about the mid-Atlantic, but then it goes south of 41.9, and the line actually covers half of Georgia's Bank. The meeting regarding TEDS is down in the mid-Atlantic, and no one in the Northeast is paying attention to it. But if they do put TEDS in and then they use this line, all the groundfish trawls, the issue with gill nets are all going to come up right across George's Bank. And this is just like the three-month closure for yellowtail. It's something that hasn't been discussed at the council. But you need to be aware that this could have significant impact on all your fisheries. And I'm a little bit dismayed that that line that was put in for the turtle chains is now has a life of its own as a new line that's never been discussed here at the council. The ramifications could be very significant to the groundfish fleet.
Anyone else in the audience? Okay. Thank you, George. NOAA General Counsel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Fortunately, not much to report at this council meeting. I can't remember if I reported this at the last meeting or not, but I will repeat myself if I did. But the appeal taken by Oceana in the lawsuit challenging Amendment 10 has been dismissed in agreement with all the parties. That appeal basically focused on the adequacy of the EIS in considering alternative measures to protect EFH. So that appeal is no longer pending. We have a schedule from the court, Federal District Court in Commonwealth of Massachusetts, challenge to the agency regarding our emergency rule, the stopgap measures in the groundfish FMP. The Massachusetts challenged that emergency rule on several grounds. Briefings have been scheduled for the December-January timeframe. And it's, of course, likely that Framework 42 may, if approved by the agency, may be implemented before the court actually hears the arguments of the parties in that lawsuit. That may have an effect on that lawsuit. I might also report that Conservation Law Foundation has successfully intervened on the government side in that particular lawsuit. And that's all I have to report, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Gene. Any questions for Gene? Okay. Science Center.
Thank you. I'd like to start out by going through some of the news about surveys. The 2006 scallop survey was completed on time on August the 11th. The survey data was fully audited and provided for stock assessment and management use on September the 1st, just 3 weeks after survey completion. And this made the data available for a critical scallop PDT meeting on the week of September the 5th. The bottom trawl survey was initiated on September the 5th and is scheduled to continue until October the 31st. It is progressing well. Some additional random stations have been added to the bottom trawl survey in southern New England to target southern New England yellowtail recruitment, additional stations on eastern Georgia's Bank to target Georgia's Bank yellowtail flounder in general, and some additional stations inshore Gulf of Maine to see if we can find any lobster gear. And that's something that Russ Brown wrote in. Regarding the delivery of the new research vessel, the Bigelow, I've been informed that the Bigelow remains in Mississippi, and there are corrections being made to the electrical panel related to the diesel-electric engines. And this is a problem that has occurred in the research vessel, the Dyson. And I guess the Bigelow has the same engine, and they're trying to correct it in the Bigelow before it actually becomes a problem for us. But what this means is that the availability of the vessel for scientific use will be delayed approximately 4 months, and therefore the vessel will not be utilized in New England any earlier than late winter or early spring of 2007. And I'm sure you're wondering how this relates to the overlap period for calibration with the Albatross, and the answer to that is that I don't know. And if you ask me questions about that after I'm done speaking, perhaps Frank Almeida, who's in the audience, might chime in on that. Help me out. I wanted to mention the scheduling. At the last meeting, we were asked to present give a presentation at this meeting on the changes in the growth rates of species. And we've been working on that research at the center, and it's an ongoing process. We've decided to postpone it, so it's not on the agenda for this meeting. But it is just about ready, and it will be presented to the Mid-Atlantic Council at their next meeting and will be presented at this council at your next meeting. So today, though, we do have a talk at noon by Dr. Mountain, who will speak on the state of the environment. Regarding the SARC scheduling worksheet, we have a SARC coming up this November, December, with ocean quahogs, Atlantic surf clam, and skates. The SARC after that, which will occur in the June of next year, will be northern shrimp and sea scallops. Then the only other thing I wanted to mention is that We're still proceeding with our plans for the GARM meetings. I know that on your agenda for this meeting, you'll be discussing the timing of those meetings. And we're proceeding along with the schedule that we presented initially, with a final GARM meeting to be held in August of 2008, with delivery of the information on September the 2nd, 2008. And with that, I'll take questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Got a couple for you, Jim. Imagine that. One, Frank might want to elaborate a little bit on the Bigelow, but my understanding is they're afraid to move her because the Dyson keeps burning up the electric drive, or part of the electric drive that makes the boat go. Now, the reason I'm mentioning this is I think it's, we have to be cognizant this has nothing to do with NIMS. Noah designed that boat. You know, the boat comes, Noah ordered four of them. They come from the Noah fleet. Then the science center gets what they sent down to them. So you can't, I don't want any blame to go to the science center on the drive. This is all Noah. You know, whoever did the research on this problem didn't do a very good job. And it's a big problem. And it's a real big problem coming at us for the overlap on this thing. Because right now they're saying 4 months, and that's wishful thinking, very wishful thinking. So there's got a huge problem coming at us where this ship ain't going to be here, and we don't know what the overlap of the Albatross is going to be going after that. So I just want everybody to be aware of it. The other question I'd have, Jim, would be the you're going to present this presentation at the MID. Would it be possible to circulate your presentation to this council so we have it and can be going over it before you put it on at the next meeting?
Yes, I'll send it to your council the same time we send it to the MID.
Anyone else? Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, regarding the Bigelow, the very important calibration work will be done when eventually the Bigelow is on the scene. Are the strategies, the plan for the calibration, is it made available? Is it on the web, for example? Is it accessible yet so we can take a look at it to see how the center is going to actually do the calibration between the Bigelow and the Albatross? Is it available yet?
I don't know the answer to that. I could contact Russ to find out. Frank might want to speak to that, but I don't know. I'm sure that Russ has had meetings about it, and there may well be a plan. I suspect there is, and I don't know if it's posted anywhere.
Okay, thank you, because I would certainly appreciate seeing that plan, not to be critical, but just to see how, you know, how the center has gone on to take this extremely difficult job. And the reason why I mentioned it is that in our own surveys inside state waters, we may make some changes fairly soon, and we could benefit from the thinking that has already gone into the standardization efforts that will be undertaken by the center. And let's see, one other question. Once the Bigelow is on scene and it is doing the surveys, I understand that some strata will be lost, some inshore strata will be lost. Are you in a position to describe now, and if not now, then now it's certainly I can get the information later on, but exactly what strata will be lost? And has the center given any thought beforehand to the consequences of the loss of those strata? And I ask the question because if indeed there is going to be a loss and it will have some impact on the overall, you know, assessments that we rely on, we would need to know that in advance so that states, for example, Massachusetts and maybe others could plan to perhaps assist in some way to compensate for those strata that would not be sampled.
Yeah, I have limited knowledge of this. I know that the NEMAP survey is in its initial year or two of work, and that will survey the inshore strata that the new research vessel won't be able to get to. So I think that that's the center's plan for picking up the gap that won't be sampled by the research vessel. And I also think that there's a limit to how far north that boat will be surveying, and that the state surveys of New England will probably have to be integrated. And again, I have limited knowledge of who's talking about that. I'd have to talk to people to find out more. And also Frank Almeida may want to put that on his list if he wants to come up and say a few words.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, I also asked the question because I'm the current chairman of NEMAP for ASMFC, and we have a meeting coming up in North Carolina shortly, next month, I believe. So I can benefit from any information you have regarding your problems that you anticipate, and perhaps through the effort of my committee, we can provide some assistance, some short, if not long-term planning for that potential problem.
Frank, do you want to comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have some information about the Bigelow. The fact that that we're already planning for a 12 to 14 week delay does indicate that it's a serious problem. We know it's a serious problem. It's a power distribution panel. It's a design. We think it's a design flaw. It's true that the Bigelow is sitting in Pascagoula. It will be there until the design flaw is corrected and the new power distribution panels are installed. We believe because the Bigelow is in Pascagoula and it's not up in Alaska, it's likely that we'll actually get our distribution panel before the Dyson, which is not going to make the Alaska Center happy, but it might in fact happen. With regard to the overlap between the Albatross and the Bigelow, we continue to argue that we need 12 to 18 months. However, we do not know what the status of the budget is going to be for the Albatross versus the Bigelow. As everything gets moved back, those are the funds that are set aside for the Bigelow and the Albatross in FY07 aren't being used. Whether or not they'll be carried over and the Albatross becomes available longer. Most people know that there are plans to not fund or reduce funding for the Albatross in FY08. We just don't know what that process is. We don't know what our FY07 budget is, so it's still in flux. This 12 to 14 week new delay is in fact a new delay. We heard about it about 2 days ago. We didn't expect it to be this long. However, we still argue that we need at least 12 to 18 months overlap between the two vessels to do our calibration studies. With regard to the inshore strata, we are very much concerned about that. We've been talking about it a lot. But one of the issues that we need to examine is whether or not missing or lost data is actually missing or lost information. There may be some strata that we get little or no information for any of the stocks that we can just not worry as much about. We need to know exactly what the draft of the vessel is when it gets here and determine how close it can come into shore. You know, some captains will come in closer than others, but we'll need to determine that and then to determine what the actual lost area from the Albatross in Delaware to the Bigelow will be. We do have membership on NEMAP. I'm a member of NEMAP, and I plan to attend the ASMFC meeting next month. It's something that we need to think about and consider. I know that we have the other options are using cooperative research funds, adding money to the state fund so that they actually come out further. These are all issues that are up in the air. The issue about calibration, the actual plans for the calibration, they are also in flux right now because depending on the season. We do have general plans, but the actual conduct of the experiments depends on when we get the vessel, where we go, and depending on the seasonality and distribution of fish and issues like that. I don't believe the plan for the calibration experiments are available widely yet. But they should be soon. Phil.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Frank. I would just like to point out that to Dave's questions there about the strata differences, and actually a whole bunch of these questions were raised quite a while ago, and the Troll Committee has sat there working on them. The priority for the Troll Committee was to gear at first, and it's a concern of mine lately that the whole survey is supposed to be somewhat near overhauled by this coming out of Bigelow. And, you know, I mean, the strata, all of the questions that were raised a few years ago were supposedly on the table, and I would maybe rephrase that. They're still on the table. The questions haven't gone away. The realities of what the ship is going to be able to do created another set of questions. But right now, I mean, we pretty much got down with the gear work and fairly well till we get to another testing run. We're basically done with that, and we sort of stalled, and I think it's a funding situation or something, but the Troll Committee at its last meeting is supposed to go forward and start making recommendations for the redesign of the survey, considering the strata, your large strata, nighttime, daytime, all of the questions that were put on the board a few years ago, yet we seem to have lost a lot of steam in getting that way when we got to them questions. So maybe we can get a little push to get going again.
Anyone else? Thanks, Frank. Does that conclude your report, Jim? Okay. Mid-Atlantic.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mid-Atlantic is behind tab 9. There was a handout this morning with the report. They met twice. I should mention that I failed to include the Mid-Atlantic's press release report, which I usually do, but you can get them on the web at their website if anybody wants to see it. The Mid met twice since we met in June. And at the June council meeting, it was pretty much cut and dry. They met at the latter part of June after us. Specs were set for Atlantic mackerel, Galago squid, Illick squid, butterfish, and surf clams and quahogs were set. The numbers are in those reports. I can give them to anybody if they want them. Pretty much all of those species were status, or, you know, stayed pretty close to status quo. There was no big changes there. A little bit of discussion was done at that meeting of a male-only spiny dogfish fishery, and there was really no conclusion because we were still having, had been told there was a new SOC, I mean, a new report coming out on the status. That ended that meeting fairly well. Right after that, some of you might have heard there's a little consternation down that end on summer flounder. The Mid met again in early August in Philadelphia, and again specifications were set, and scup was set for 16 million pounds for a TAL, which is down from 16.27. Black sea basses TAL was 6.5 million pounds. That's down from the 8 million pounds it was. I don't know how that says up. Bluefish TAL was 27.7 million pounds, up from 24.79. And then you get to summer flounder, and that was an interesting day. At the end of the day, council recommended 19.9 million pounds, and that's down from 26 million pounds. There was a lot of discussion at this meeting on summer flounder. I'm sure mostly everybody here is pretty familiar with it. But it raises a lot of issues that I think this council needs to talk about at some point. Right now, the service is recommended 5 million to hit the goal. I think 5.7, is it, George, or something like that? Not a lot of fish. Council was kind of kind of stuck on this one. It's a huge cut to make this happen, and it's the fishery has reached its highest point in a long time series that they have there. I think it is 30, 40 years, whatever it was. But this stock is at its highest point, and according to the plan, they got to double that. They just got to go once again. It's at 104, I think it is, or something. They want to go to 200. The goal is 204 million. I think the stock is at 110 or somewhere thereabouts. So we got to double it, and it's made for an interesting meeting. Yeah, like I said, at the end of the day, Summer Flounder TAL was set at 19.9 million. And the Science Center had looked at it and recommended that they're going to go back and look at the reference points for this goal. And they're going to present these supposedly at the October meeting. I guess that's on track. I don't know. To see what, see if we're going to be, if the reference points are viable. There was some questions raised as to whether that goal was actually viable. So I did a meeting in a couple of weeks. I guess we'll be taking it back up again. But as it stands right now, it's quite a problem. Now, to me, the first thing that jumps out at me was the retrospective that's causing this. I mean, we've dealt with it here before, and we're going to deal with it again. But the retrospective analysis is the driving factor in this summer flounder situation. But then again, to this council, there's a few things that need to be discussed here at some point. You know, I mean, this is 7 years into a plan, and you're only halfway there, and you're going to fall right, you know, shut the fishery down. It's a lot of interesting discussions. So get away from that. One of the other points in there was the multi-year specs. They were, I think they were adopted 2 years ago, George, or was it three on Summer Flounder? I forget.
I think three.
Yeah.
But they didn't, last year they had to vary from what they thought that they were going to set for last year, and obviously this year it's totally different than what we had expected for this year. So they're only proposing them for 1 year this time.
Well, that's my point. I mean, 3 years ago everything was rosy. We set out a picture, and I think the projection was for $36 million last year, and we ended up with $23 million. Now it was just a projected guess of setting out a multi-year spec. And then when the numbers came in, we're going to fish at a third less. Well, we never said it was going to be 36, but that was, I mean, the count mid never said it was going to be 36, but their projection was 36. That's what went out in the press releases, and the public basically thinks there's 30. The cut last year was from 36 to 26 when it wasn't. It was, you know, actually from 30 to 26. So you get a very false reading with this multi-year stuff if you're not careful, and I think we need to discuss that sometime. A little later on, the council also changed the Lalago squid, which they've been managing now in quarters. And they're going to, next year, going to try it in trimesters, which they did at the first year of the plan. And they're going back to the trimesters, and I think it's for 1 year time period to try it. The problem was the service has problems tracking and working the quarters so close to see if we can alleviate some of the problems with tracking and the quotas for the service. So we're trying that for a year, and that had its own charge of discussions. So at the end of the day, and then further planning was also worked on for Amendment 14 for the SCUP plan, Amendment 15 for the Summer Flounder plan. And the last thing I have is the MID was soliciting advisors for their tilefish panel, and I urge the industry to get on there. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any questions or comments with Phil? Dr. Pierce.
It's a comment. It's addressed more to Pete Jensen than anyone else, and that is that the Commonwealth greatly appreciates the efforts of the Mid-Atlantic Council with the Lalago squid going to the trimester, getting away from the quarterly quotas. Our staff worked closely with the Mid-Atlantic Council staff on this issue to make the point that with the status quo fishery, that is the quarters, the inshore fishery was impacted greatly because when the second quarter would begin, very quickly landings would be high, the trip limit would be dropped, and therefore the inshore fishery would not be the beneficiary of the higher limit. So, again, thanks to the Mid-Atlantic Council for moving in that direction. We look forward to seeing how it works. But I think it's an excellent example of the Mid-Atlantic Council being responsive to a New England state's concerns, and not just Massachusetts, but Rhode Island and other states as well that have a springtime, early summer fishery.
Anybody else? Jim.
Yeah, I just have a little information about the fluke review. It did take place on September 14th and 15th. The report is due on September the 28th from the reviewers, and those reports will be sent to the Science Center, and presentations are being organized. I've seen some email from the chairman of the review, Dr. Rick Mathot, and it looks like he'll be presenting the results of the review at the ASMFC meeting in North Carolina, and the agenda for the Mid-Atlantic Council is being juggled to also have Dr. Mathot present something at the next Mid-Atlantic Council meeting. I don't know the exact time yet.
Anybody else? All right. Let's move on to the U.S. Coast Guard.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Two quick hitters are going to show a video of SAR cases from last year while I'm doing the presentation. So to save time, I'll just keep going. I'm also going to introduce some personnel changes we had at the district. Commander Mark Mooney is here. He is my deputy for law enforcement and homeland security. And Lieutenant Commander E.J. Marone is our new fisheries officer. And still at the Fisheries Training Center is Lieutenant Ryan Hamill. And they're all here today if there's any questions. Admiral Pekoski is transferred. He's now in Washington, D.C. Admiral Tim Sullivan took over in August, and he is at a conference in Washington, so he won't be here today. We've had no major search and rescue cases during this last period. We've had 35 casualty cases, though, with one death. That accident was attributed to an entanglement in lobster gear. One vessel sank and one vessel ran aground. Nine commercial fishing vessels were terminated, mainly due to lack of survival suits and out-of-service survival rafts. In August, we ran a really successful joint NOAA Coast Guard operation that ran from Montauk, New York, down to Cape May. So that was between D1 and D5. That resulted in 362 fishing vessel sightings with 93 boardings, 40 safety violations, and 14 fisheries violations. And that's all we have for our report today.
Questions or comments? We have five more items in the reports. How do people feel? Do you want to push through these and then take a break, or do you want to take a break now and come back and finish the reports? Any preference? All right, let's move on.
I'm taking mine now.
All right, Roger. NIMS enforcement.
Good morning, everybody. Andy Cohen's not here today. Matter of fact, at the same time, there's a national leadership team meeting. Dale Jones and all the SACs are just down the street. They're actually at the Marriott there in Peabody having the meeting down there. So you might want to take the opportunity if they're in town for the next 2 days if you want to reach out for them. In addition to the report that we put on your desk, I know that's a little outdated. We should have had an updated one. It'll probably be coming out in the next couple of weeks. We had a few additional significant seizures. I won't get into all of them. There was a number of cases over the last couple of months, but significant, we had a case, $111,000 seizure out of the, I think it was out of New Bedford for a scallop case regarding an overage in the Nantucket lightship access area. in an additional $116,000 possession limit case for exceeding the closed area 2 possession limit. We've had a number of border operations that we've been trying to conduct with the Canadian fisheries and also the agents in NOAA and some of immigration officers up in the Canadian border. And they've made some smaller cases, but we ended up grabbing, I believe, $7,000 worth of undersized groundfish on one of those cases up in the Canadian border over the last couple of months. There's been a few significant NOVAs. A shark fin case was settled for $750,000 with a dealership in the area. And additional permit sanctions were also given out over the last couple of months. We had a meeting with the Coast Guard yesterday with Captain McPherson and his staff, and we look forward to enjoying a good relationship, even with his new staff here. I think we'll continue to do good things together. And we had our quarterly meeting yesterday. We also continue to work with the states on the joint enforcement agreements. We have periodic meetings over the last couple of weeks. I believe the guys up north had a meeting in Portland with a joint meeting with New Hampshire, Maine, and Mass Environmental Police. Mass Environmental Police continues to work with us on some patrols, as do New Hampshire and as do Maine and the other states. The VMS program's moving forward. Bill Semro's here today if you have any questions regarding VMS. The reimbursement program, again, is handled out of Silver Springs. Bill can answer as many questions as you can, but a lot of those decisions are made out of the Silver Springs office regarding VMS reimbursement program. We attended last weekend a couple of agents. Bill Semro and his staff attended the New Bedford Waterfront Festival, which I think was good. We try to address a lot of those outreaches as best as we can. You know, like as everybody, we have a number of priorities, but we do try to work these outreach sessions. They're good informational, educational. I know we got some feedback over the years that sometimes reaching out and being out there in the industry, we can show them about VMS, try to help them out as best as we can. And Bill was there. Linda Galvin's been there. And if you have any other questions regarding the festival and what we gave out, you could ask Bill as well because he was there. Any questions?
Any questions? Thank you.
Okay. Thanks.
ASMFC.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I'll do that. We have there actually is in the packet the meeting summary from our summer meeting. There were a number of items that are kind of joint with councils, herring and dogfish. We have sent to our technical committee a review of the a proposal from Massachusetts, and Dr. Pierce is here if he wants to go into a little bit more detail, but we are looking at their proposal to increase the quota slightly to address the abundance of the dogfish plan, or the dogfish stock, I should say. Herring, we've been conducting a number of hearings, as you know, about herring, joint herring hearings. We also have some lobster hearings that have been going on to get feedback from the public on recommendations from our stock assessment that was done on lobster very recently. I think those are just about done. Menhaden, we dealt with the cap of the Menhaden reduction fishery in Chesapeake Bay. It was revised slightly to address more recent information and deal with the need to have research conducted by the industry in the Chesapeake Bay to deal with the issue of localized depletion. There's a number of other species in there that I'm not going to spend the time discussing. If someone has particular interest in them, we can certainly do it now or afterwards. Next month is the ASMFC's annual meeting. It's held in Atlantic Beach. I always get that mixed up, but I'm sure I'll find it a very nice place. And it's in North Carolina. I don't know how you get there, but but we're looking forward to it. And obviously, there's a lot of different policy, different boards that we'll be meeting, as well as the policy board that we're meeting on Thursday. So let me turn over to Dr. Pierce if he wanted to say anything about the proposal from Massachusetts and the review process that would be going on for that.
I won't get into too many details because points that I would like to raise and will raise are more appropriate for the agenda tomorrow when we get into the presentation of the SOC results and we talk about the status of dogfish. Suffice it to say, dogfish are not overfished, and overfishing is no longer occurring. So Massachusetts made a proposal to ASMFC for a relatively minor increase in the overall quota. And that particular proposal resulted in ASMFC asking the technical committee for review to see if indeed the increase in mortality on dogfish was minuscule. Indeed it is, but we await the technical committee review, their stamp of approval. At the same time, to my surprise, the monitoring committee, the council's monitoring committee, is meeting today with the technical committee to discuss the assessment and to think about the three-year specification that the councils are now working under, you know, the bycatch quota. So I anticipate that, you know, we'll get a recommendation, this council will get a recommendation from the monitoring committee after it concludes its business today, and certainly ASMFC when we get together again, the Spiny Dogfish Board, when we get together again next month in Atlantic Beach, we'll find out indeed what the future holds for the spiny dogfish fishery, in quotes. In particular, I should highlight this now, we made this proposal in part because of our great concern about the abundance of dogfish, especially inshore at Massachusetts Bay, Cape Cod Bay, where we have an overlap of a very large biomass, as evidenced from fishermen's catches, commercial and recreational, a very large overlap on concentrations of juvenile codfish. Bottom trawl surveys, the federal survey, as well as the state survey, has indicated Young of the Year abundance. And I'd like to think that some of that abundance was due in part to Massachusetts CCZ, the Cod Conservation Zone, this past winter, where we afforded some protection for pre-spawning and spawning fish. Long story short, recent information was made available to me, a scientific paper published in a prestigious journal, authored by three prominent Northeast Fisheries Science Center scientists, where they provide tables describing the consumption of cod, juvenile codfish, age one fish, by spiny dogfish. And without getting into all the details, let me just point out that in 1998, the paper, if I can paraphrase this correctly, indicates that 80% of age one codfish were consumed. Of all that was available, age one codfish were consumed by spiny dogfish. And the same paper makes the case that there's a need for us to be concerned about aggregations of large amounts of dogfish in areas where juvenile codfish may abound. Hence our initiative to generate discussion, to maybe get the ball rolling for future serious discussion and action that relates to ecosystem-based management and our need to deal with elasmobranchs and their effect on groundfish abundance, in this particular case, dogfish and juvenile codfish. We're very concerned, of course, about 2007, 2008, 2009 as we move forward with the need to do more for Gulf of Maine codfish. We have a biomass target that's relatively high. We're not hitting that target yet. And if we're off our rebuilding curve, off the path to get to where we need to be, if indeed dogfish are consuming the age one fish at the rates that the scientific paper indicates, then we've got a very good reason to believe that all of our serious attempts to, you know, restrain fishermen to rebuild codfish may be undercut, at least to some extent, by the predator biomass that's out there in the Gulf of Maine, notably in the inshore portion of the Gulf of Maine.
Thank you, David. I'm glad you didn't go into detail. Anybody else? Okay, scallop survey advisory panel. Andy?
Thank you. Ron Smolowitz came up with me. He's the newly elected chair of the committee. I'm going to run through the meeting summary, and Ron is going to follow up with some thoughts about future direction of the committee. I'm going to refer to documents number 4 and number 5 under tab 4, the first being the meeting summary we held on June 28th in New Bedford. It was held. This was the second unfunded meeting. We had free meeting facilities at Dockside Repair and Harbor Development Commission. And the second document I'll refer to is document 5, which is some proposed terms of reference. We had a very good turnout, a very productive meeting. The meeting started out with a survey dredge workshop where NIMS brought several survey dredges with them to seek some comment and advice from experienced captains and other researchers at the meeting. There were a number of very good recommendations listed on page 3 and 4 of the summary. And the overall outcome of that was that NIMS is looking for assistance later this year and into next year to reconfigure the survey dredge to perform obtain better consistency and reliability of dredge. A lot of people look at the dredge as, well, just catch more, use a larger commercial dredge, but there's a compromise between getting representative catches, a practical amount of catch to work up scientifically, which takes a great deal of time, and also observing the abundance of small scallops, which is not the focus of the commercial dredge. During the meeting, Dr. Brown informed us that the NOAA Fisheries had decided not to use the RV Bigelow to conduct the scallop survey beginning in 2008, and it leaves open the issue of how to plan going forward with a scallop survey using a dredge, which the panel is looking at both dredge and other technologies, both having individual advantages and being complementary. The fishery service is going to have to either use other vessels or lease vessels from the commercial fishery to be able to conduct that scallop survey beginning in 2008. In the meantime, there's 12 days on the Albatross scheduled for calibration experiments in 2007, and it offers an opportunity to compare not just differences in vessels, but differences in dredge configuration, which is part of this survey dredge redesign and workshop. The meeting reconvened at the Harbor Development Commission. The committee nominated and voted for Ron Smolowitz as chair and Jim Kendall as vice chair. The panel reviewed terms of reference based on a draft that was provided to the committee. I'll go over those as soon as I finish with the summary. And then we also had a presentation from Dr. Rego discussing some of the technical issues of how to combine survey results from different types of surveys to estimate abundance and scallop biomass. It was very informative, and it will go a long way towards helping us focus on how to integrate the various types of surveys. Dr. Bill Fole from New Jersey gave a video presentation of an AUV system that uses sonar to detect scallops. It's very preliminary at this point, and he's working on a demonstration project. Norman Vines showed some photos and video taken with a towed sled using strobe lights. The sled is towed above the bottom at an approximate distance above the bottom, the exact amount determined by a set of lasers to determine the area seafloor actually observed and scallops measured. So, finally, for the terms of reference, the committee is proposing five terms of reference in Document 5. The first two focusing on technology, one on improving the survey dredge design that I talked about earlier, the second being investigating new technology and identifying how it can work and complement other surveys. The last three focusing on integration of scallop surveys and between the various types of surveys and management. Number three, recommending plans for sampling designs and protocols that would be a standard practice for cooperative industry surveys and the annual survey. The fourth being development of integration of specific needs surveys. For example, if there's an area where small scallops have been identified, how to determine their boundaries and enumerate those, as well as estimate TACs for open areas, very similar to what's being done with the elephant trunk area this year. And lastly, how to better coordinate these various surveys into the management program so it's a more efficient and timely process. So thank you very much, and if you want, I can answer questions or Ron can follow up with future direction of this panel.
Andy, I'm very concerned that the Bigelow might not start a survey in 2008, and we appear to have no plans for 2008 for a scallop survey. We've had two out of the last 3 years of overfishing occurring in the scallop resource. Early indications are that it may be overfishing in 2006. And, you know, fishermen are reporting their catch levels are going down significantly, anecdotal information. So, you know, I know that it's our job as a council to worry about that, not your group that's looking at dredge comparisons. So my question is, when does the council get very concerned about not having a survey in 2008? Is it the long-term plan for the service to use the Bigelow to do scallop surveys, or is it a long-term plan to use video? And is your group discussing that? That's good for now.
Okay. As far as when to be concerned, my opinion is the time to be concerned is now, and the fishery service, we should be working closely with the fishery service to ensure that there is a scallop survey conducted in 2008, whether it be by lease vessels or by using the Delaware or some other vessel. We need to stay on top of that. The long-term plan is not to use the Bigelow. I think there's a decision well up the chain that competing priorities. The panel's opinion discussion is that there are significant advantages to using a dredge survey because you have the opportunity to bring the catch to the surface for measurement and observation and the entire catch. Not to say that there aren't advantages of other types of surveys using video or other remote sensing, but they're complementary types of surveys that can work together. One does not necessarily replace the other. We've had some difficulties with measuring biomass in agreement on length frequencies and meat weights in video surveys that don't actually sample the animal on the bottom.
I just sort of would like to add to that. First of all, the panel is looking way beyond just examining changes to the dredge. There seems to be a general consensus that this dredge is an excellent design. It's held up for 30 years. It just needs some tweaking, and whether it's not necessarily needs to be modified for improved efficiency, but maybe for more consistency in operation. But we have three other methods of surveying right now as well, and we're going to be looking at that on October 4th at the PDT meeting, comparing the three surveys that were recently conducted in the elephant trunk. We have the NIMS survey from the Albatross, but we also have the VIM survey using a NIMS dredge versus a commercial dredge on a grid pattern, and we have the SMAS video survey. The fourth technology that Richard Taylor and the HUI folks are working on is the towed continuous video, and that has a lot of promise in the long run. In the meantime, we're looking at several options for 2007 where the Albatross will be used, but possibly using a UNOLS vessel for 12 days in comparison with the Albatross, and then relying on the UNOLS vessel for 2008. We're also talking about using commercial platforms, such as what Bill DePaul is using in the VIMS project. However, that's very constrained as far as the number of scientists you could put on board comfortably for a length of time, and you have the intervessel issues as well. One of the things that's we're moving way beyond just counting scallops. We also want to look at the health condition of the scallop. And learn how that impacts the mortality and project mortality. The incidental fishing mortality associated with the fisheries in high-dense areas, looking before and after a fishery opens and closes. We want to look at the predator-prey relationships. We have some video footage now from Richard Taylor in Closed Area 2 where you wouldn't believe the densities of starfish on the bottom smothering the scallop beds. If we have information of that nature, we'd like to know how to project the impact of that for future harvest. So it's that whole debate that we're looking at. We have no money now. The center has no money towards this. The council has no money towards this. We've submitted a 2007 scallop RSA set-aside proposal to at least fund some meetings to examine the dredge modifications. But that's where we stand right now. I mean, we have a very good group of people, a very large and diverse group of people interested in this, everything from expanding it to a habitat survey to look beyond just counting scallops. But right now that's the limitations is going to be money. I'm not too worried about the 2008 survey. We'll be able to carry it off. I'm worried about the improvements that we need to be make to better obtain the optimum yield from the resource and deal with the related questions.
Any questions? All right, thank you. Last item is the Northeast Multispecies Capacity Reduction Committee. Chris?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Chris Meaney, and I'm a staff member for the buyout committee, and I'm here to update the council on the committee's progress. Okay, today I'm briefly going to review the basics of the program, illuminate program development and changes since the June council meeting, and highlight upcoming events. So with this program, all category A, B, and C days at sea permit holders may participate. A federal loan is sought by the groundfish industry with a 30-year repayment target. Bids will be selected using a reverse auction style, and loan will be repaid by a 3% tax on gross revenues on all groundfish trips. For A and B days at sea permit holders, there's three alternatives. One will go forward. The first alternative would be the surrender of groundfish permits only. Second alternative, surrender of all federal moratorium permits. And the third alternative is a hybrid of the first two, revenues and days at sea threshold. If less than 25% of revenues from groundfish trips, or if a permit holder has less than 15 days at sea, they'd only have to surrender the groundfish permit. If greater than 25% of revenues are made on groundfish trips, or greater than 15 days at sea are held, surrender of all permits. And it's important for me to note here that it's with the surrender of all permits under Alternative 2 or the Alternative 3 situation, the funds to pay for non-groundfish permits would come from a separate grant, separate from the loan, from the federal government. For sea days at sea only permits, permit holders, people would be given a lump sum payment of $100 per days at sea. And this is limited to $5.7 million. And it's intended that the sea days will, that any sea days in the future will not be reactivated until the buyout loan is repaid. So basically, since the June council meeting, we've wrapped up our public information sessions. We had 10 in the Northeast and Mid-Atlantic areas. We had approximately 250 people, and there was a general level of interest in the program. Some of the primary issues that we heard from attendees were what impacts would this program have on days at sea, latent and active effort, and types of vessels, et cetera. Also, concerns surrounded the redirection of effort and the catch history multiplier. Some folks were concerned that including a catch history multiplier in estimating capacity would increase the cost to the industry. And we've also conducted quite a deal of analysis to address the public's concerns, as well as to provide the committee with as much information as possible so they could make an informed decision. Our analysis has shown, shows that the buyout is likely to substantially reduce allocated days at sea, active days at sea, and permit history. Effort redirection is more likely with alternatives 1 and 3, and the catch history multiplier does not raise the cost of capacity and it targets active permits. Here's an example of one of the models that was ran under an alternative 2 situation with $100 million allocated to, you can see, for instance, with, say, 300 bids, reasonable bids submitted, about 30% of capacity is retired. Program changes that have been made since June, bids are still going to be evaluated by using a buyout score, and this is just demonstrates that the catch history multiplier is included in the formula. The minimum capacity to be removed has been lowered by the committee from 30% to 25%, and they set a target range of 30 to 40%. There will be a maximum capacity removal threshold at 50%, and there will be a maximum acceptable bid so that the industry does not overpay for that added extra unit of capacity that could be bought. No more than 50% of permits from any one of four vessel length classes will be removed, and it's the intention of the committee that open access permits may be retained. For alternatives 2 or 3, where there would be the surrender of all permits, vessels may be scrapped or used for non-fisheries uses. The sea day at sea payment was lowered from $150 to $100 per days at sea, and in the final referendum, in order for the buyout to go ahead, two-thirds in favor. All permit holders will be able to vote, and two-thirds need to be in favor. So on the horizon, the committee is working to select a preferred alternative out of one of those three. Staff will be meeting with state directors to address the issue of what happens in the future with state permits. We're gearing up for the first referendum to gauge permit holder support, and then enabling legislation will be sought. So the timeline, October, November, is when we anticipate holding the first referendum. Then the committee will review the referendum results and work to obtain congressional legislation in the winter of 06-07. And depending on how things move along, summer 2007, NOAA will send a letter out soliciting binding bids, and the final referendum will be in fall 2007. And basically, if anybody is interested more in our analysis or our methods, everything can be found on anybuyout.org, and my contact information is there as well. It's also included on the presentation copies that are on the table in the back. And that's it. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks for keeping us up to date. Any questions or comments? Paul.
Thanks, Chris. Who do you query in the referendum? And is there going to be any weighted voting? And what percentage is needed to continue to go forward?
Sure. All permit holders will be asked for their support. Votes will be weighted on the days at sea held by a permit on a 4-to-2-to-1 ratio. A days, four, get four votes. B days, two votes. C days, one vote. And your last, is there any percent required? No, for this first referendum, the committee decided that it's best, we're just going to be gauging support. So having any type of requirement of support to go ahead wouldn't be in the best interest, because we're going to ask people's opinion and have them submit comments, and we feel that, or the committee feels that, judging by the comments that we hear, we'll be able to get they'll be able to get a good idea on whether or not it is supported, and if it's not, then they don't have any intention of going forward.
Dave.
Yeah, I have two questions. The first was the option. Are you going to pick the option before the first referendum? In other words, what retirement option people, so that they know what they're voting on?
Yes, that's the intention. The committee is scheduled to have a meeting next week, and hopefully they will be able to decide on a preferred alternative. And then once that happens, we'll have a mailing with an executive summary and all the information that's necessary for people to make an informed decision on whether or not they support it or not.
My second question is on this first referendum. Do you have a rough date yet as to when you hope to conduct that? Or
As soon as possible, because people are interested in seeing this. It's difficult to set a rough date because we haven't decided on a preferred alternative yet. But I can tell you what happens once we do set the preferred alternative. Staff will write up a meeting summary and put together the full document and send it out to the committee so they can review it and sign off on it. And then once that happens, we will send out the mailing. So however long it takes in between that decision on the preferred alternative, hopefully a week or two.
Okay, my last question is, who conducts the referendum? Is it conducted under the auspices of NOAA Fisheries, or is it conducted by this private group?
The first referendum? Good question. It was our intention to do it to have an electronic paper ballot hybrid vote. But dealing with the world of e-balloting is very interesting, and I think that if anybody wants to get in on a market, there's some potential there to actually make that process better. So it could either be a independent third party with encrypted voting and people would have passwords and things like that, or it would be myself who would develop the ballot and people would respond by mailing it back to me, and then I'd process the votes and go through the comments.
Anyone else on the council? Maggie?
Thank you. On that last issue that was raised regarding electronic versus paper ballot, the committee is still struggling with, what is a preferred way to get input. It would be helpful if people from the fishing community would speak to me or Chris or somebody else that's on the committee to give us some insight into how they think it would be best for us to solicit that input from the fishing community. Would people be more likely to fill out a paper ballot versus an electronic ballot is what we really need to know. Thank you.
Sally.
Are you going to keep track at all of people who vote whether they intend to stay in the fishery or leave the fishery? Because if you get a big return of people who are considering being bought out, voting in favor of the buyout as compared to those who say that they're going to stay in, that's very different depending on how the proportion goes.
At this point, it's the committee's intention just to gauge support whether or not they're in favor of this being presented to Congress. So, no.
Anyone else? Okay, thank you, Chris. It's 11:30 now. Let's come back at 11:45 for the presentation. Thank you. Whenever you're ready, Dave.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, I'd like to point out